Okay, reading from the Jiva Dharma. Chapter 3 still. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're in Jiva Dharma where Sannyas Thakur is explaining the duties of Vanashram. So I'll just read and then put everything in context, hopefully get everyone on the same page. The duties for the members of all the Vanas are nonviolence, truthfulness, abstention from theft, freedom from lust, anger, and greed, and endeavoring for the pleasure and welfare of all living beings. Everyone in this learned assembly knows the meaning of the Sanskrit slokas, so I'm not translating them all. I just want to say that the Vana ashram, system of Vana ashram, Vana and ashram, is the basis of Vaidhi Jivana, a life that is carried out in accordance with the rules and regulations. The prominence of piety in a country is measured by the extent to which the Vana ashram's impiety is measured by the extent to which the Vanashram system is absent there. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Vipashindhu Bhayevacha Vatitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadara Srivasadi Gaur Bhakti Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So greetings from Stuyvesant Falls, Dishonored Falls. I just came back from a very nice weekend in Washington, D.C., with Hari Kirtan, who arranged very nice programs for me. I kind of want to really thank deeply the people who are regularly listening. Of course, these go on podcasts, and many people are downloading them, and I'm very thankful. But especially the people that call in every week. And I think there's a great fruit to this kind of study. You can think we started this over 6 years ago and think how many books we've gone through. But this is a real comprehensive study of the tattva, the science of Krishna consciousness. So if we patiently go through it, and I'm also looking forward to go through it to revise all my understandings of the different philosophical truths of Krishna consciousness. And I really hope to deepen them. Sometimes it becomes a little tedious, not often. This section is like that, many, many verses quoted, etc. But I think the austerity or effort will not go unrewarded. I've always made the point about good ideas, you know, hearing good ideas, or hearing the Shastra, which is the repository of good ideas. And the wonderful effect it has in your consciousness by putting such favorable thoughts in your mind that guide your life in a favorable and auspicious way. And it's those thoughts based on the good ideas, that based on the Shastra, that distinguish you from just the ordinary people and really, really give you a hope of achieving something very wonderful in just this lifetime. So we're studying the story of Sannyas Thakur, of course, Jiva Dharma, of the guru is Prem Das, and the Sannyas Thakur, his Mayavadi, becomes initiated. And now he's a first-class devotee named Vaishnav Das. And we're following the lives of these great saints as they live in the beautiful island of Bodrum Dweep in the Malati Madhava Kunj, an incredibly inspirational environment for Krishna consciousness and the mode of goodness, with much remembrance of the pastoral environment that inspires bhakti, because it's the environment which God lives in his lila or pastimes. So that's kind of, if you look at it like a movie, that's the setting. So many different plots and stories will happen, but that's the setting. Lives of people with misconceptions coming to a great teacher, having those misconceptions cleared, becoming fixed in the truth of Krishna consciousness, and then committing oneself to that truth by surrendering to those who fully encompass the body and can conceptualize and represent that truth. So kirtan party comes, and there's one aristocratic Brahmin who may have a little pride. And he asked the question in the assembly, why do not the Vaishnavas follow all the responsibilities, daily responsibilities, recognized religious, spiritual responsibilities of the Brahmins? So Prem Das Babaji Maharaj, the guru, has little taste for argument or debate, and he asks Vaishnav Das to answer that question. So he, because Vaishnav Das, previously Sannyas Thakur, is really a great scholar, now he's become a great devotional scholar, to answer this misinformed, arrogant, aristocratic Brahmin, he does something very scholarly. He's going to explain the duties of a Brahmin, which is the point in question, why do not the Vaishnavas follow them. He's going to put it in a greater context so that one can understand it. And in understanding really what those duties are, understanding also why a Vaishnava is not bound. So, you know, he can explain that real spiritual life is when you don't just understand that you should serve God, but you have a spontaneous desire in your heart. You have a spontaneous desire in your heart to please God. So your actions are motivated by this faith, this energy of the soul, this attraction, deep attraction to serve God. which Vaishnav Das explains is the spiritual nature, but describes that the jiva who is bound still very much attached to the bodily platform, even if they have some kind of enlightened worldview. The jiva who is bound cannot easily comprehend this spiritual attachment. It's like a 3-year-old child, a 7-year-old child trying to understand sex life. It's beyond their experience. So one who is bound, that spiritual attachment is beyond his experience, unless by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, he gets that faith, that seed of devotion. By the service and association of a Vaishnava who has that spiritual attachment. So for those people who don't have that faith, that understanding of spiritual attachment, spontaneous, they're not fortunate to have that awakening in the soul. So the shastras will manifest in the hearts of the sages. For there's no hope for people without a path of rules and regulations to guide their life in a progressive way to understand the higher realization that we're not just the body, we're the soul. And that ultimate spiritual activity is acting on that platform. So Vaishnav Das is explaining how the Shastra provides different types of instructions for people who don't have yet have spontaneous attraction according to their adhikari, according to their faith, according to their qualifications. And that there are three types of people, karma, people who are attached to material roots. So there's rules and regulations for them in the Manush Samhita and different shastras. And then there's the jnanis, whose faith is towards liberation. In a sense of a negation of this world. And then there's the bhaktas, whose faith is in love and devotion. Or they understand that bhakti is the goal, even if they're not yet at that level. So the Vedas establish different codes of rules and regulations for each type of person. So now he's going to discuss first the rules and regulations for those interested in karma. The first is shubha and ashubha, this karma that's auspicious. And then there's ashubha, it's not auspicious because it's not shastric. It's your whim. It's following just your modes. There's no higher direction there. You'll see where this is going. It's very interesting. And for those who shuha karma, there are two types. There's nitya and nainitika. And then there's kamya, but kamya is just following the shastras just to get, purely material benediction or boon. So really, auspicious, there's nitya and naimittika. There's daily duties, like Gayatri and prayers and responsibility to the family, the ancestors. So that's called traditionally nitya karma, activities that you do every day. And then there's naimittika karma, occasional duties like atonement and rites. So to carry out this nitya and naimittika, not dharma, but karma, to carry it out so that your life is guided by the proper decisions according to your attachments, according to your nature, how to make the proper decisions so that you gradually become detached from all selfishness within the consciousness. So to carry out this nitya and naimittika shastra, van ashram is prescribed. A proper situation and a proper situation both occupationally and socially. And then he describes the qualities of a Brahmin, his peacefulness, tolerance, and the Kshatriya, his generosity, his valor, etc. So this is basically, and therefore the conclusion is, the prominence of impiety in a country is measured by the extent that people follow van ashram. 1 second. The extent that a person situates himself or society is guiding or facilitating people to be situated socially properly, and they follow the rules of that social order and occupationally, to the extent that a society facilitates that. And people follow their different responsibilities. And a pious person who performs all the appropriate duties according to his prescribed duties, because prescription is according to nature. So according to your nature, there's social and occupational responsibilities. And to carry out them out is pious. Now, of course, we don't have a social system, but to the extent that we do, obviously the piety is following your duties. And the main duties are either occupational or social. Now he's going to continue. I'm going to do a little reading, but he's going to make an interesting point. The point he's going to make is that actually these type of duties for the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas and the Grihasthas and the Brahmacharis, etc., it's a misnomer to say that they're nitya karma. Because nitya means every day, but people change ashrams. Their duties change. People change varnas. Maybe a Brahmin in this life, you may be a Sudra in the next life. So the point he's going to make is the point he's going to make, and I'll read how he makes it, but the point he's going to make is that nitya karma is a misnomer. The real nitya karma, the duties that are performed every day, is the nature of the soul, which is to serve God. With all your heart, with all your soul, worth, that's your nitya dharma. So he said, now let us consider in what sense the words nitya, eternal, and naimittika, circumstantial, have been used in relationship to the word karma. If we consider the profound purport of the shastras, we can see that these two words have not been used to refer to karma in a paramartika sense. That means a spirit, that's the Sanskrit word for spiritual, that always relates to the supreme spiritual truth. Rather, they've been used in a routine or figurative sense. Properly speaking, words like nitya dharma, nitya karma, and nitya tattva can only be used to describe the pure spiritual position of the jiva. Therefore, in general use of word nitya karma, the word nitya is applied to the word karma only in a figurative sense, because karma in this world is a means to an end and only remotely indicates eternal truth. So, varnashram is not our eternal nature. That's what he's saying. So the point he's going to ultimately come to, and we'll get that, is that the real nitya karma, the real everyday thing one does, and the proper use of the term is in relationship to the soul. And when one does those duties, then his duties become that which facilitates his absorption in Krishna consciousness, in Sanatana Dharma. And therefore, a Vaishnava is not obligated to follow all the rules. After all, the highest Dharma, which is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, is Savai Pumso Paro Dharmo Yato Bhaktir Adoksaje Oitikyapati Atayatma Supersediti. The highest Dharma, Savai certainly, Paro Dharma, the highest, Savai Pumso Paro Dharmo Yato Bhaktir Adoksaje, in that which devotion to God arises. Oitikyapati Atayatma. Devotion which is unmotivated, unbroken, and which is the nature of the soul, and therefore it can really satisfy the soul. So that's our highest dharma. So you can see there's a tension. Because obviously people under the modes need to follow some social and occupational duties. But unlike someone who is in Varnashram, not Daivi Varnashram, not the transcendental Varnashram, meant for Vaishnavas, he is bound by those duties. But a Vaishnava, he judges things, what makes me closer to Krishna. And if a particular rule in Varnashram doesn't facilitate that, then the Vaishnava doesn't have to follow that. There's no divorce. Prabhupada stressed there's no divorce. It ruins families. It affects the children. It traumatizes. So we, even as Vaishnavas, we follow these rules. But ultimately, our decisions have to be made on what brings us closer to Krishna. And generally speaking, it's following the rules and regulations. But ultimately speaking, the ultimate judgment for the Vaishnava, so therefore for the Vaishnava, he may not follow all the rules. It depends on what facilitates his focus and absorption in Krishna. Properly speaking, words like Nitya Dharma, Nitya Karma, and Nitya Tattva can only be used to describe the pure spiritual condition of the jiva. So when you want to put Nitya, it has to refer to the soul and the duties of the soul. Therefore, in the general use of the word Nitya Karma, the word Nitya is applied to the word karma only in a figurative sense. Because karma in this world is a means to an end and only remotely indicates eternal truth. So people do their duties for an end. But if you achieve that end, then you're no longer responsible for those duties. One may be a Brahmin and he may be a Brahmin Vaishnava. But in his next life, he may be born as a coward boy in Vrindavan. So therefore, those duties as a Brahmin no longer apply. And even within this life, one who is a Brahmin may come to Vaishnavism and certain of the rules won't facilitate him becoming Krishna conscious. Actually, karma is never eternal. Karma and jnana may only be thought of as nitya in an indirect sense when karma is directed towards jnana by means of karma and when jnana is directed towards bhakti. So the most purifying karma is the karma one does to become purified and detached and understand that we're spiritual and ultimately understand that we're part of God and meant for God's service. So in that sense, an indirect sense, those duties may have some sense of nitya. The Brahmin chanting of the Brahma Gayatri mantra is sometimes described as nitya karma. This is valid in the sense that practices that are remotely directed towards bhakti through physical activities may be termed nitya, but only because they aim at nitya dharma. In reality, they are not nitya. The usage is known as upachar, figurative. They're not. The gopis don't chant their Gayatri in that way. The Brahma Gayatri. They certainly don't chant the Brahma Gayatri. So how is it nitya? You may chant the Brahma Gayatri in this life, and next life, it may not be required in your spiritual life. From the point of view of the essential nature of things, the nitya dharma of the jivas is unalloyed spiritual practice, and all other types of dharma on the nitika, occasional. So he's enlightening this Brahmin that all these duties that you think are nitya are actually, you know, the Brahma Gayatri and your prayers and the things that you do and the rituals, etc. The things that you think are nitya are actually nainitika. They're occasional, actually. So he's enlightening the Brahmin about his duties. Actually, the only true nitya karma for the jivas is Krishna prema. In ontological terms, this true nitya karma is referred to as unalloyed spiritual cultivation or activities directed towards reinstating one's pure transcendental consciousness. So the real only nitya dharma is bhakti, which is aimed towards awakening your eternal position and reinstating you. Muktir hidva yata rupam, giving up the temporary, to be situated in your spiritual thing, your spiritual form. So that's the only nitya karma. Bhakti is the only nitya karma, the only eternal activity. And it's such a beautiful point. When you are chanting Hare Krishna and doing it with attention and devotion, that sense of devotion and focus on God is connected with who you really are, the soul. And one who actually meditates and focuses on spiritual, he actually realizes that. This applies to vanashram duties. This replies to Ashtanga Yoga and Sankhya again and Tapasya. They only get some sense of nitya, eternal responsibilities, when those things are connected with achieving devotion. But now these are all naimittika dharma, because the jiva would not need these dharmas if he's not bound. The duties that you have are only in relationship to which modes of nature are binding you. You have duties because you're bound, and these are the activities to purify you of that. If you are no longer bound, then those activities are not relevant anymore for you. But if you're bound and you're performing spiritual activities to become purified and ultimately come to the point of devotional service, then that's not naimittika temporary. That's connected with the eternal. The conditioned state of being bewildered by Maya itself is a circumstantial cause, and the function or duty that is promoted by a circumstantial cause is known as naimittika dharma. So if the cause of your activity is you're being bound, the cause of what your responsibilities are is related to being bound, and the conditioned state is only circumstantial, then those activities only become circumstantial. If your material condition is only circumstantial, then the activities you do in relationship to the material temporary situation is also circumstantial. The conditioned state of being bewildered by Maya itself is a circumstantial cause, and the function or duty that is prompted by a circumstantial cause is known as naimittika dharma, temporary. Therefore, from the absolute spiritual perspective, anything but bhakti is naimittika dharma. It's a temporary activity, because its impetus for doing is the impetus is temporary itself, the foundation of the body. Naimittika dharma includes the superiority of the Brahmins, their sandhya vandana, their prayers, their acceptance of sannyas after renunciation of karma. All these activities are highly recommended in the Dharma Shastras and they are beneficial in consideration of appropriate eligibility. But still, they have no standing in relationship to Nitya Karma. So now what he's going to give is some, just, this is all coming down to the explanation that Vaishnav Dharma is to please God. And therefore, that being our focus, we only do the things that help us surrender. And therefore, sometimes some of the Van Ashram activities, some of the activities related to the Brahman, are not done by us. This is how he's answering the question. It's very powerful. So now he's going to quote a few verses. You'll have to bear with me. 7, 9, 10. This is maybe Prahlad, not sure. In my estimation, a bhakta who has taken birth in a family of dog eaters, but who has dedicated his mind, words, and activities to the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, is superior to a Brahmin endowed with all 12 brahminical qualities, but who is diverted from the lotus feet of Sri Padmanabha. Such a bhakta, although of lowly birth, can purify himself and his entire family. Well, the Brahmin who is filled with pride cannot even purify himself. So he's explaining that Brahmin, there's something superior to a Brahmin. And that's one who's fully surrendered to Krishna, even if their material situation is very compromised. Like being born in a family of dog eaters, where you don't do any of those rituals, and they're not prescribed for your condition. Yet, you're considered higher. As it says in Bhagavad Gita, such a brilliant verse that, just as a large reservoir of water, one who knows to fill the needs of so many small ponds, so one who knows the purport of the Vedas, solves, all the other obligations and responsibilities. Because the purpose of the Vedas is to elevate our consciousness to spiritual consciousness. All the other religious activities mentioned in the Vedas are to deal with material attached people and how to gradually purify them. That's what all the Vedic prescriptions are. So one who has come to the point of acting in terms of the soul is not for liberation, but for pure devotional service. One who has that consciousness, he's no longer required to all the purposes of everything else he was doing is solved. It's just like someone in physical therapy, maybe they became a quadriplegic or they've lost some and they have to do physical therapy. So first there's all kinds of exercises on the feet that keeps them moving, and then there's kind of like a treadmill. So there's so many things, but the goal is to walk. And once a person comes to the platform of walking, then his whole rehabilitation is walking. And all the purposes of all the other things that one did to bring one to that point, one is not, so they're already served. So similarly, one who knows the import of the Vedas, which is to develop spiritual consciousness, if he comes to that point, all the other obligations and duties are covered and responsible. So he no longer is obligated to those things. Even some of the brahminical religious activities. The 12 qualities of a Brahmin are truthfulness, control of the senses, austerity, freedom from malice, modesty, tolerance, freedom from envy, sacrifice, charity, fortitude, studying the Vedas, accepting vows. Brahmins endowed with these 12 qualities are certainly worthy of honor in this world. However, if a chandala, a dog eater, is a devotee, he is superior to the Brahmins who possess these qualities but do not have Krishna bhakti. The purport is that a person who is born a chandala, but who has since been purified by samskaras achieved through sadhu sangha, and who is now engaged in the jiva's nitya dharma of pure spiritual cult, he's a superior to a Brahmin who's established in Naimittika Dharma, but who abstains from the Nitya Dharma of unalloyed devotional service. So that's the goal. And when you're at the goal, then you've met your other obligations. There's a nice verse, Aho Bhatasva Pachato Griyan Yajiva Grebhartate Namatubhya. That one who has come to the point of spiritual love, which means the expression of that spiritual love in terms of kirtan, one who has come to that point, he's considered to already have bathed in all the holy rivers, read all the sacred texts. So I'm going to stop here for today. Are there any questions? And welcome someone to say hello.
Hello, Maharaj.
Yeah, who is this?
It's Alexandra. Hare Krishna.
Alexandra, so nice that you're on the Sangha.
To hear you again. I have a question about this love of God, and you know, I know that different traditions, in terms of Christianity, Judaism, Islam, they all have that same emphasis on, you know, love of God in different ways. But I feel like there is still a hierarchy within people's minds, and they hold to that their belief transcends all others, and that their love is the real love. So, you know, I'm just wondering if the texts ever comment on that, God's many forms, and,
you know
obviously it, that the purest, if there is such a thing, or, you know, Krishna being the transcendental one, that.
You know, it was discussed in the first chapter of this book. Very, very, all questions are really dealt with in this book. And I don't know if I can find it right now, but I think the answer was, I'll even try to find it, but because it's always nice to read from the text. But the answer was basically that Nitya Dharma is the nature of soul to love God. So there's not many different religions. There's only one religion, to love God. And that can be expressed. I mean, really, one who is actually a devotee, that's how he sees religion.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the beauty of Krishna consciousness. I think the beauty of Krishna consciousness is that our worldview allows us to see different faiths as the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because religion is not a particular faith. It's the very nature of the soul to love God.
Hmm.
So
yeah.
if you see someone who actually is, if you see someone who's actually loving God, as Prabhupada said, he who loves God, his religion is perfect. But of course, one does have a particular allegiance or trust in the, he must have, in the efficacy and the authority of one's particular path, and we certainly feel that, and you know, the comprehensiveness of the Vaishnava philosophy, etc. But we don't look at that. And it's not that allegiance alone makes one better than one. Even if you feel that way, wow, I have the most pure, direct religion. The fact that you belong to something itself doesn't make you better than another person. What makes you better is that you're in one sense is your adherence to your practices, etc. Now, I'm going to come to it, so I think it's going to come soon. He answered it directly so beautifully. I just want to read it to you, Alexandra.
Okay,
it's coming up soon.
It's tomorrow.
1 second. I'm just looking for something. Yeah, it's the next chapter. Oh, here it is. Oh, Mahatma, Dharma is only one, not two or many. The Jivas only have one Dharma, and it is known as Vaishnava Dharma. Differences of language, country, or race cannot create differences in Dharma. Jiva Dharma, the religion of the soul, is the constitutional function of living entities. People may give it different names, but they cannot create a different constitutional function. Jiva Dharma, the religion of the soul, is the unadulterated spiritual love that the infinitesimal living entity has for the infinite entity. It appears to become distorted into various mundane forms because the living entities possess different material natures. That is why the name Vaishnava Dharma is begun to identify the pure form of Jiva Dharma. The degree of Vaishnava Dharma in any religion or Dharma is a measure of its purity. So it's one religion is to love God, and it's manifest in different ways. But there are some presentations of spirituality that are atheism. They're atheists, and they're not the same. Alexander, did that help?
Yes, very much. Thank you. I mean, that's, yeah.
Okay, thank you. So it's clear in Vaishnavism, religion is the nature of the soul. It's not a particular faith.
Mm-hmm.
And the extent that people love God, that's the extent that their religion is pure. Nanda Dula, you had a question?
I have done something to praise you, Maharaj. You have done wonderful work. Just recently, I listened to Hanumat Prasad Maharaj in ISV, and he was praising you for writing about the wave of devotion. And he is actually, And I am sure, you know, them are contacted, you know. And he told, for the Bhakti Shastri course, they should read this thing. This is a must.
Good. Well, thank you. But Prabhupada's great. People really like that book.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mother. Thank you for all your efforts in the last 6 years.
Thank you for being such a gentleman, Nanda Dulal.
Thank you.
And soon you will be rewarded by your efforts as the great Saint Jayadvaita Swami, as it is its Richmond, Virginia.
Yeah, I'm waiting for him. Thank you, Mother.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. This is Vajradhe.
Vajradhe, Hare Krishna.
Hare
Krishna. Okay. My mind is still about what I promised you about the second initiation, and I'm now going to suggest some kind of times and speak to you and your husband. Okay, so, okay, anybody else like to say hello?
Thank you.
Okay, we can end for now. Lunch, you call for two.
Thank you, Maharaj.